Hello, I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 9.5 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, January the 15th. Today, the state Senate will debate a bill put forth by the Senate Majority Leader, Democratic Senator Russ Decker. The bill would raise the minimum wage from $6.50 an hour to $7.25 an hour, and it would index the minimum wage or adjust it with inflation. So when inflation goes up, so would the minimum wage. Is this a good idea or not? Do you support this legislation or not? We will welcome your questions and views for our two guests this hour, one who supports the bill in this half hour and one who opposes it after 7:30. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Should the state raise its minimum wage and index it to inflation? Our first guest is a proponent of the bill. He is David Newby, president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So why do you like this legislation?
Well, Joy, you know, really this is a no-brainer because it's the right thing to do both for workers and for low-wage small businesses especially. Because it at least keeps minimum wage workers from slipping further into poverty and maintains their purchasing power, at the same time that it gives businesses what they always say that they want, and that is predictability, because they'll know when the wage is going to be increased, and they always say that they want to have predictability with regard to wages and regulations. So the bottom line is that there's no rational reason not to adopt a small increase in the minimum wage and then simply index it for inflation just like we do Social Security.
Yeah, but those businesses also say that this is not going to have the effect that you want it to have, that it's not necessarily going to get people out of poverty, but it's also going to just mean it's going to mean fewer jobs.
Well, they say that, and yet the research indicates that that is not the issue. That's not what happens when you increase the minimum wage. In fact, most of the research in the last 7 or 8 years has indicated that when you increase the minimum wage, you actually increase the number of jobs. And that's simply because you're putting more money into the economy, that lower wage workers have a little bit more to spend, and they're spending every cent that they earn because they're right on the edge of being able to survive.
Yeah, what about the argument that those minimum wage workers are primarily teenagers or these are starter jobs that people don't depend on?
Well, you know, we keep hearing that also, don't we? Mm. To give a good example of what has happened here in Wisconsin, there were about 250,000 people in Wisconsin who benefited from the last two increases that we had in the minimum wage in 2005 and 2006. And the data indicates that about 80% of those wage earners at the minimum wage were adults, and more than one-third of those adults were heads of household. So, sure, we're talking about teenagers, but for the most part, we're talking about adults who depend on that wage to support themselves and very often one or two kids as well.
How common is this in the country, David Newby, for a state to link its minimum wage adjustments to inflation?
Well, we're not exactly a pathbreaker. There's already 10 states that index their minimum wage for inflation, and we're also not a pathbreaker in terms of increasing our minimum wage because there are right now about 28 states that have a minimum wage above the federal level.
Yeah. And why is this so needed in Wisconsin?
Well, it's needed all over the country. And if we had a better minimum wage law and a higher minimum wage level at the federal level, then we probably wouldn't need it in Wisconsin. But without indexing, either at the state or federal level, we're always in this situation where we have to pass a law in order to increase the wage. And what happened the last time, for example, is that we went from, on the federal level, we went from about 1997 until 2007 with no increase whatsoever in the federal minimum wage. And that meant that those at the minimum wage had lost about 20% of their purchasing power during that period. And then all of a sudden, we had a major increase, a major bump in the minimum wage, which is much more disruptive for the economy and for small business than if we have smaller increments every year.
Our guest is David Newby, president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO, talking with us about a bill that is going to be up for debate and a vote in the state Senate today. It would raise the state's minimum wage by 75 cents an hour, and it would increase the minimum wage each year based on inflation. Do we want to increase the state's minimum wage and index it to hike automatically based on the inflation rate? 1-800-642-1234. What do you think? What questions do you have? In Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 17 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, January the 15th. We are talking for the rest of this half hour with David Newby, president of Wisconsin's AFL-CIO, about a bill that is going to be debated in the state Senate today. It would raise the state's minimum wage and then link future increases to inflation. Index the minimum wage. What do you think of this bill? Coming up after 7:30, after the 7:30 news, we will hear from a guest from the National Federation of Independent Businesses who is opposed to this legislation. Our first caller for David Newby is Kyle in Lake Geneva. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I just wanted to make a comment real quick. This is the first time I've heard of this, so I don't want to sound like I'm too critical, but I'm just going to ask a few questions. The first one is, I think we should be a little cautious about tying the inflation rate to minimum wage. And that's because I think if you were to look at Germany in between the world wars when they had hyperinflation, they were trying to pass $1 million notes that wouldn't even buy a loaf of bread. So I think that, what were they going to pay people that much? So you got to be careful. And also, it just seems like a Band-Aid that's covering a problem. In a normal, healthy, free market economy, minimum wage would automatically, naturally, because people would make more, a healthy economy is growing. Well, I think what we should address is inflation itself and the causes of inflation. We should be addressing the root of the problem and not just the outcome.
Yeah. David Newby?
Well, it's very difficult to do that. And actually, we've had a pretty stable rate of inflation for about the last 15, 20 years. It's averaged between 2.5% and 3% a year. And what that means, for example, in terms of this minimum wage debate, is that if we raised our minimum wage to $7.25 an hour, then about a year from now, or a year from this coming summer, there would be an increase of about 21 cents an hour, hardly a major increase, and hardly an increase that businesses could not pretty easily incorporate into their structure. And we have to realize, too, that yes, the caller is correct with regard to what happened to Germany in the 1930s, but that's a very, very unusual situation. And simply to say that, well, we ought to get inflation under control, that sounds fine, except how do people live in the meantime? How do they buy enough food simply to feed themselves and their families?
Thank you, Kyle, for the call. Gary in Brookfield. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. The only thing I got it going here is, on the lower income bracket people and the working man, why don't they just lower the taxes, income taxes on them? For example, Warren Buffett pays less taxes than his secretary.
Well, what is it? To talk about whether we should raise the minimum wage and link it to inflation so it adjusts automatically.
Well, I just feel like, you're going to have to do that in the meantime. But in the meantime, if they could do something just to take this tax away from the lower income people. You don't have to raise.
I guess he thinks you don't have to raise the minimum wage if there wasn't a tax burden on lower income people.
Well, two things on that, Joy. One is that, why should taxpayers have to make up for employers not paying a fair wage? And secondly, the reality is that people at this wage level are paying little or nothing in income tax anyway. They are paying Social Security and other payroll taxes. But because of our income tax system, they are usually not paying much, if anything, in the way of income tax. So that's not really a way that you can possibly fix the system.
Yeah.
Let me indicate, too, that what we're talking about here in terms of the wage, and that is that our current minimum wage is $6.50 an hour. Now, if you're working 40 hours a week for 52 weeks out of the year, that means you're earning $13,325. And that is actually less than the poverty level for two people. If we raised it to $7.25, then the total annual wage would go up to a little over $15,000. And that's about halfway between the 2007 federal poverty level of a family of two and three. So, you know, we are not talking about a wage that is making people rich. People are still very, very much on the edge. And at this level of wage, very, very few of those people are getting any kind of benefits, whether it's health insurance or a pension. So they are living strictly on that wage without any kind of supplement whatsoever.
Yeah. Will the businesses that they might be working at for that minimum wage be charging them more for products because that's what the businesses say they have to do to hike the minimum wage?
Well, it might happen. Again, we're talking about such a small increase that there's not going to be a significant disruption. But everything else is going up, and why should not the wages of those who are actually doing the work go up at the same rate? There's simply no... Again, there's no rational reason to say that workers should have to bear the impact of inflation and, as a result, have less purchasing power each year while everything else, like utilities and the cost of other products, are going up.
Mm-hmm. Robin,
let's put people first.
Yes, and Robin in Boscobel is next. Hi.
Hi. You know, I was listening to this, and my husband and I own a clinic in Boscobel, and I was thinking, you know, if you just kept raising the minimum wage, you'd have to raise Medicare and Medicaid payments as well, because many clinics, you know, particularly dental clinics, although we don't have a dental clinic, just cannot afford to take Medicaid patients anymore because they couldn't make payroll. And we have difficulty with that, too. We don't want to turn away patients. We want to help everyone who comes in our door. But at the same time, you know...
Are you saying, Robin, that you just want to talk about getting better reimbursements for Medicare?
Well, you would almost have to do that because otherwise we're torn between helping our patients and raising the payroll for our employees.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. You have a lot of minimum wage employees?
Well, yeah, we have five, six people in our office.
Yeah, David Newby.
Well, I can certainly understand the situation that you're in, but I think you've also indicated that the solution is not, essentially reducing the purchasing power of your workers. We've got to fix Medicare and Medicaid, and we have a real problem with that in Wisconsin, because we have, compared to other states, very low rates of reimbursement for those services, and that has simply got to change, and that has to be changed on the federal level. But again, what is the rationale for saying that, okay, we have to, because we don't have adequate rates for paying for Medicare and Medicaid procedures, that this has to come out of the pockets of our very lowest wage workers? It doesn't make sense.
And we will go now to Todd in Oconomowoc. Hi, Todd.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. My comment is that while I agree minimum wage should be adjusted, I hate to see it done automatically and think that corporate profits should be taxed to subsidize minimum wage. That would keep the employers honest on taking care of their employees because they would be paying back to the wages instead of wanting to pay taxes.
Yeah, and why would you not want the minimum wage index to adjust automatically, Todd?
Because I think if the employers take care of their employees, the wages will take care of themselves.
David Newby?
Well, that would be nice if we could count on all employers doing that, but we know that we can't. And this way we keep all employers on a level playing field. They all have to pay at least the minimum wage as specified. And that helps in terms of competition, that employers in the same industry have to compete on the same wage level. And if they're taking better care of their workers, they're probably getting more productivity out of those workers, and they're doing better. But again, you can't count on that, and that's the reason that we have a minimum wage to begin with.
Yeah. We have a few more minutes with David Newby. He is president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO, talking with us about why he supports a bill that's going to be voted on in the state Senate today, which would hike the state's minimum wage and adjust it or index it to inflation so it rises automatically. What do you think of this idea? What questions do you have? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, and Madison 263-1890. Our next caller is John in Brussels. Hi, John.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
One of the things that I've found, having taught high school kids for a long time and listening to some of the reasons why they stay or don't stay is at an employer, is they just don't seem to be trained very well. And I think one of the things that I would like to see, and I totally agree with the increase of the minimum wage, I'd like to see employers have a little flexibility in how they pay that increase in terms of maybe being able to average it over the year and maybe keep that increase in the form of a bonus in terms of if they stay with the company, if they don't, you know, they don't have to deal with that high employee turnover where you're seeing the employees not bother to train, or the employers not being able to train their employees properly or willing to, and the employee saying, well, heck, I'm not getting trained, so I'm just going to change jobs and go somewhere else, and productivity just is not there.
Mm-hmm. What about that, David?
Well, first of all, we do have a lower minimum wage for teenagers. And secondly, you know, a good employer is going to make an investment in their employees. And as the caller indicates, when you do that, you're going to get better productivity out of your workers, and you're going to have less turnover. But the reality is that all employers don't do that. So the individual worker does have to have some protection in that situation.
Yeah. I'm looking here that says that your bill, this bill, has the support of not only AFL-CIO but other unions and Governor Doyle, but it does not have much support in the Republican-led assembly. Do you have high hopes for this bill passing or not?
Well, it's going to be a struggle. It always is. And your next guest, Bill Smith from the Federation of Independent Business, is going to say that, you know, some small businesses simply can't afford an increase in order to keep the purchasing power the same, which, again, I don't think makes sense, because why should people have to work for less each year in terms of what they can buy? And the other thing is that when the minimum wage was first established back in the 1930s, it was set at 50% of the average hourly wage. Now, today, if we had a minimum wage at 50% of the average hourly wage, it would be close to $10 an hour. Mm-hmm. Instead, we're talking about raising it from $6.50 to $7.25. If we could do better in the 1930s, why can't we do at least that well today? It just doesn't make any sense not to keep our poorest workers at a higher standard of living.
We will ponder that over the news. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy.
David Newby, president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO. And we'll continue this discussion after this news. It's 7:36. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio on this Tuesday, January the 15th. I'm Joy Cardine, and we will continue talking about legislation that is up for debate today in the state Senate, a bill that would hike the state's minimum wage from $6.50 an hour to $7.25 an hour. And the bill would also link the minimum wage to inflation, index the minimum wage so it would adjust automatically each year. We just heard from the AFL-CIO's David Newby about why this bill is needed in our last half hour, and why he and other unions support this legislation. In this half hour, a guest who opposes this bill. And we will continue to take your calls and your emails on what you think and with your questions. 1-800-642-1234. That's toll-free from anywhere. And we have open lines. Do you think the state should hike the minimum wage and then index it to inflation so that the minimum wage in Wisconsin adjusts automatically? Is that a good idea or not? 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. 23 other states have minimum wages higher than Wisconsin, according to the U.S. Department of Labor. And of those, 10 states allow for increases based on inflation. Taking those figures out of an Associated Press report on this bill that is in some of today's papers. Our guest this hour is, or this half hour, is Bill Smith, Wisconsin State Director of the National Federation of Independent Businesses. And he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So why do you oppose this legislation?
Well, it's, of course, we in the small business community oppose any increase in the minimum wage. We believe, and there are lots and lots of studies to support, that the minimum wage is really a very effective or ineffective economic tool. It might be a very effective political tool, but on the economics, it's very difficult to justify an increase in the minimum wage, let alone an annual increase in that minimum wage.
Well, why do you say that?
Well, basically, and we can get into dueling studies, and I regret I wasn't able to hear David Newby earlier, but it's ineffective because it doesn't really target the people on the lower end of the income scale in the workforce. There are lots of studies on this. There was, and I'm going to quote just a current one. In 2007, there were 280 economists surveyed by the University of New Hampshire Survey Center, and 73% of those economists agreed that government-mandated hike in the minimum wage causes job loss. Half of those participants in that study found that minimum wage laws have no impact at all on changes in poverty rates. In fact, Robert Reich, the former Secretary of Labor in the Clinton administration, he stated that, after all, most minimum wage workers are not poor. About 55% said a higher minimum wage is an inefficient way to address the needs of low-income families. So minimum wage as an economic policy is ineffective, it's inefficient, and then you add in the negative impact that it has on job creation and job growth and on the very that very segment of our workforce that the proponents of minimum wage are trying to lift up. They're on the front line for the negative impact. Fewer hours, fewer job opportunities, and less income for them because of the inflationary impact of an annual increase in minimum wage.
Yeah, and you're right. We probably could go into dueling studies. While I didn't have David Newby give me every citation talking about how a number of 80%, I believe, of the people in minimum wage jobs are adults and not necessarily teenagers, and that they're bringing home, if they work 40 hours a week, they're bringing in, you know, way less than the poverty level with only, you know, $13,300 some dollars a year.
Sure, but of course, the increase that the proponents are advocating in this in Senate Bill 130 certainly wouldn't lift them out of the low income or the poverty range either, which shows that it is really just a political policy more than an economic policy. In fact, we can do the dueling studies, but there's one study that I saw that a union organizer conceded that the high minimum, David Reynolds, he said that the high minimum wage does cause businesses to attract and retain the best workers, and the union-backed Economic Policy Institute has admitted that higher minimum wages will attract good workers, meaning less skilled workers need apply. So it prices some of our more limited skilled workers right out of the marketplace, because after all, an employer is only going to pay a wage based on the experience and the skill level of those workers. So it really does have an impact, and we're not suggesting necessarily that it's going to eliminate jobs, which we believe it will, but it will eliminate job opportunities. That may mean that a hostess at a restaurant, for example, or a part-time worker at a retail store will have fewer hours because the employer, the sales of that particular business did not support the higher wage. Wages are driven by the success in the growth of that business. We all know that small business particularly competes for its labor just like it competes for its customers. And we're not going to be paying our workers less than the market because we can't find people to work at that rate. So as wages go up, other adjustments have to be adjusted, or other benefits have to be adjusted. As we struggle with our health insurance costs and our energy costs and our higher payroll costs, we simply cannot have the government mandating a floor, if you will, for wages as well.
Yeah. Let me take some calls.
Okay.
And Brian in Madison joins us first. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I'm a Teamster myself, organizer, and I'm against what he's saying. I mean, if gas goes up, milk goes up, toilet paper goes up, why wouldn't labor costs go up? You want to try to meet the demand that's out there. Now, if products stay down and gas consumption and all that stuff across the board, the products that the consumer buys, if that stays down, then yeah, there's no reason to raise it. But if you're going to raise all this other cost, you have to raise labor to meet the standards. Otherwise, poverty just gets lower. I totally disagree with it. And where the health costs, yeah, that's totally out of control. But we still have the best health care in the world, and yet I keep seeing CEO pay go up, but I don't see the people that are in the production line. Their wages are not going up.
Yeah, kind of a noisy line, Brian. But if you know the workers have to pay all these extra costs for everything going up, why shouldn't their pay also go up?
Well, I agree, certainly. But the problem is, as I said earlier, the minimum wage is not the most efficient way to...
It might not be the most efficient way, but it would help pay some bills.
But it would also reduce employment opportunities and also reduces purchasing power, Joy. We can't just have, our wages fixed to some figure or some formula that's unrelated to the job experience or the sales of that business, the prosperity of that business. Why doesn't, if it's important, and we believe it is, to lift and assist the needs of our lower-income, less skilled workforce, then why don't we take a look at the earned income tax credit? The economists tell us that 70% said that the earned income tax credit best addresses the needs of poor families. Only 9% of those same economists said a higher minimum wage is the most efficient way to address the needs of poor families. So we are not here to suggest that some of our workers in our workforce need some help, because we're always going to have that end of our workforce that are less skilled and lower paid, and we know the struggle that's going on out there with regard to energy and health care. But why don't we be more efficient with our policies? Rather than give everyone an increase in the minimum wage, even those from households that might have a $100,000 household income, they get the same raise. Why don't we target the low-income working families of the state with the earned income tax credit, which is far more efficient because it goes right to the people who need it?
Our guest is Bill Smith. He is the Wisconsin State Director of the National Federation of Independent Businesses, telling us why his group opposes a bill that will be debated and voted on today in the state Senate, which would hike the state's minimum wage and index it to inflation so that it rises automatically to keep up with inflation. What do you think of this? What questions do you have? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Good to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's now 13 minutes before 8 o'clock. Coming up after 8... a presidential straw poll, your opportunity to call in and stump for your favorite candidate if the Wisconsin primary were to be held today, like is happening in Michigan. Who would get your vote for president and why? A presidential straw poll in our 8 o'clock hour. For the rest of this hour, we are talking with Bill Smith, the Wisconsin State Director of the National Federation of Independent Businesses, telling us why he opposes a bill in the state Senate today that would hike the state's minimum wage from the current $6.50 an hour to $7.25 an hour and have it adjust automatically by indexing it with inflation. The bill is expected to pass in the state Senate today, but its future is more doubtful in the state assembly. We wonder what you think about this idea. David Newby, the president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO, was with us in our first half hour of this segment of the program, telling us why he supports the bill. Jake in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan joins us. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. I'm actually headed to... I'm in Wisconsin right now driving, following up on a job lead. Mm-hmm. But approximately 2 years ago, we in Michigan, they passed, they raised the minimum wage. And I don't think the economy's taken quite a slump since then. I don't think it's you can credit it all to, due to the raise of the minimum wage, but it also probably has a lot to do with manufacturing and the automotive industry changing.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering what the, like to hear what your guest has to say about economic history. What generally happens when states raise minimum wage? And I'm just kind of a little bit of my background. I'm a member of two unions, kind of a conservative Democrat, I guess, is how I vote. Mm-hmm. And I'm 28 years old now. I haven't made minimum wage since I was probably 15. I've been working in the trades, and I mean minimum wage really couldn't imagine myself working on a minimum wage job. I couldn't live on it.
Right.
And most of the people that I can think of that I know make minimum wage are the younger people. Or maybe it's a lower skilled worker working a second job making minimum wage, and some of the people that I see when I go to local businesses, making at minimum wage jobs, they aren't even worth minimum wage. Some of the work output they get.
Yeah, Jake. Let me get our guest in on this, and good luck with your job search. Hope that lead works out for you. Well, Bill Smith, how much does it really affect the economy when states hike their minimum wage?
Well, again, of course, I'm sure that if David were on the line with me, he would have a study that shows that it has no effect. But, national data suggests that states can expect a 3-6% loss in employment for every 10% increase in the minimum wage. But I did want to make one other comment in response to your caller. State of Michigan, of course, has a small exemption for small business. And, in fact, almost half the states in the country have some kind of an accommodation or exemption from the increase for smaller businesses. And that's in recognition of by their legislatures that the minimum wage has a disproportionate impact on the small business economy and the small business workforce. So they are trying to cushion that or give some relief to small business employers by simply not covering them at the same rate as big business. We don't have that in Wisconsin, and we should. So I just wanted to make that comment. And the other issue is this whole notion of indexing and keeping up with keeping up with other wage growth. Well, the studies show that the minimum wage employees have enjoyed a minimum wage growth of over 10% a year for those full-time minimum wage workers. That's nearly three times the average wage growth for all employees. So, and I think your caller touched on this when he said that typically a minimum wage is an entry wage. And after a very short number of months or weeks even, that minimum wage, if they start at a minimum wage or near the minimum wage, and that's typically where they start, is near the minimum wage, they grow out of that. As that employee acquires experience and reliability and the skills needed to do the job, they quickly get a raise, and they're no longer at that minimum wage level.
So only the employees who aren't any good stay at the minimum wage?
I'm sorry?
He was saying that he sees a lot of workers who don't even deserve the minimum wage. Are you saying that if somebody is getting the minimum wage, they're an entry level or they're or they're not any good?
Well, typically minimum wage workers are grouped in smaller businesses, lower wage, less skilled jobs. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, I think even David Newby would agree with that.
Mm-hmm. David and Nina is with us. Hi, David.
Yes, as long as we're talking about fixing the minimum wage law, this law has a loophole built into it, which has a far more profound effect on our business and on our economy than I think people are aware of. The law is written in such a way that it encourages individuals who are chronically unemployed individuals to try to get a job as maybe an auto salesman or a construction salesman or a realtor or something in a sales position that is a straight commission. And when they do that, they can work for a company and they can show up for 1 to 2 hours every week or two for 6 months and then go back and fabricate an artificial detailing of having worked, let's say, 60, 70, 80 hours a week, and then go back after the employer, since they didn't do anything and they were straight commission, they didn't make any money, but they had the employer then has to go back and pay time for 40 hours plus time and a half for whether they put down 60, 80, or 100 hours per week. And the state of Wisconsin pretty well forces that down the throat of small businesses. So a good chunk of the income that should maybe go out to raises and bonuses for the hardworking, honest employees is channeled over to these guys that are chronically unemployed and are technically, you know, hired as straight commission salespeople, but don't really do much work.
Yeah, I'm not sure I get it. Is that you want to comment on that, Bill Smith?
I appreciate the call, and I took some notes to follow up on that. But it sounds somewhat like an independent contractor issue as well, that has been a real tough issue for us to resolve at both the state and the federal level. But I'm not sure how that relates back to minimum wage.
Yeah.
But it is an interesting comment from your caller.
Gordon in Manitowoc. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joy.
Morning.
Hey, I read the New York Times 2 weeks ago on a Friday. They had an article in there, and in the European Union, minimum wage runs between $10 and $12 an hour. And I know they're going to say something about Germany, and Germany's unemployment is at 8%. And they do pay the people under 22 a little less money. But I personally think if you can't afford to pay $6, $7, $8 an hour, you should do the work yourself. With that, I'll just hang up.
All right, Bill Smith.
Well, some of those European countries with a higher minimum wage have had a very flat economy with regard to job growth and job creation as well. And they've also had much higher rates of inflation in some of those countries. The caller indicates if you can't afford $7 or $8, the next caller might say if you can't afford $10 or $12 or $13 or $14 an hour, you should do it yourself. So it just what he really has illuminated is just how ineffective setting a minimum wage for all employers really is. Wages should and are driven by the marketplace. And again, I get back to in recognition of lower-income, low-skilled workers and people living in poverty, the Earned Income Tax Credit. If government really were serious about helping people and families that are below the federal poverty level, they would look at funding the Earned Income Tax Credit, which really targets them and helps those who need the help the most. They wouldn't be interested in helping workers that are in households that might represent $70,000 to $90,000 or $100,000 in household income. But that, in effect, is what the increase in the minimum wage does. It helps all those workers, whether they need it or not. All of them will benefit from some benefit from an increase in minimum wage.
Dave in Menominee. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Well, we haven't had a federal increase in the minimum wage for a long time, only recently. I've got a friend I visited in Holland. We correspond daily, and I brought this issue up to him. He has a son that's 20 that just got into the workforce there at minimum wage, and that's 9.36 euro, which is about 13 bucks an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And when I told him what our minimum wage is here, and that there are adults that are forced to have to take that wage because like here in Menominee, all the foundries and factories are gone. I mean, that's all there were here when I was growing up. So now you're faced with not being able to get, you know, a factory or foundry job and having to deal with a minimum wage or just above minimum wage job with employers that say you'll get a significant increase on your next check as a
wage. Dave, I've got to jump in because we have less than a minute to go for a response from Bill Smith.
Well, you know, I'm starting to sound a little redundant here, probably, Joy, but the reality is that, you know, you get what you pay for, and there's always going to be competition for jobs, just like there is competition throughout the economy for products and services. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even when the Congress passed the federal minimum wage bill, they included $4.5 billion in a tax package favorable to smaller firms to cushion the blow, so to speak. So there's broad recognition that this does have a negative impact on small business, and we can help those lower income, less skilled people through an earned income tax credit without the negative effect of a higher minimum wage.
And we'll leave it there. Thanks for being with us.
All right, Joy.
Bill Smith, Wisconsin State Director of the National Federation of Independent Businesses. Thanks to Leo Duran, to Keisha Mabra, and to Karen Prager for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.